Welcome, welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is episode 98.
And if this is your first time joining us, welcome on in.
Welcome.
So we kind of oopsed last week and marked our calendar wrong on which week was supposed to be an episode. So, hey, here it is this week.
Whoops.
Also, last week, we finally got to go do something we've been trying to do for, what, at least 5 years now?
I think since like 2017, 2018.
Something like that.
Yeah.
We finally went to go see the band Ghost live.
Yeah, yeah.
Which people have been complaining on the Facebooks about the no phone policy, which it was not that fucking bad.
I thought it was great.
And what? Well, it was. But people were like, oh, I'm spending this much money for concert tickets. I should be able to use my phone or not. Why are you using your fucking phone at a concert in the first place? You know, it's like a conversation I had with one of our Twitch friends, one of our early listeners, about that thing. Like, he's made the comments about all he ever does is, like, take video pictures of, like, the intro parts, and that's it. And then he's watching the rest of the time. Because, like, any other thing you take pictures of, you don't ever look at. And
right.
I have proof of that on my Google, which, you know, since after that, I got a notification from Google about my storage being full.
Yeah.
Mostly because it was a bazillion screenshots of me trying to turn my phone off in the morning or stuff for episodes. But there's video from the Mastodon Gojira show that we went to. I took a video of that giant tall monster thing in
my
hand,
yeah,
and put it to my Facebook page. And then I never looked at it again. So yeah, he's right. So go to a show. Don't take pictures. Don't take video. Be in the moment. Because what we observed, but from what we could see from our seats, was something great. And we heard something we haven't heard in a very long time. The sound of people talking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was crazy.
Like, you know, Sarah and I chit chat about whatever, you know, but there was a point where we didn't. And I just happened to stop and listen. It was the sound of people talking.
Yeah.
Because nobody could get their phones and doom scroll waiting for the show to start. People around us down below. Everybody was talking to everybody. Like when we got there, there wasn't much people around us to talk chit chat with anyway, when we first got there. But also when Ghost took the stage, there wasn't a sea of cell phones in the air of people watching through that. They were being in the moment with the opening song of Peacefield.
Yeah, definitely an experience. And I would prefer if all concerts were like that.
Right. So for how that all worked, when you first go in, you know, do they do the random spot check, people, metal detectors, all that stuff. Then everybody, you know, everybody gets swept through the metal detector that way. And then as you do your tickets, they write on a little piece of paper as your reminder, your section, your seats and blah, 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 all that good stuff. And then you get your phone put in a little bag. That was all separated by a company. And they had areas where you could use your phone. There was designated areas and they had it posted where you could use them. They would unlock your phone and then you would have to lock your bag. They would lock the bag back up when you would leave that area if for some reason you needed to use it. So like Sarah said, I would like to see more of this happen.
Yeah. There's a video that I saw, was it yesterday, I think, a couple days ago, of Tobias, the lead singer, like,
Toblerone fudge.
Doing this, like, you know, like, this is what he sees. Like, he's trying to look at, you know, his fan base, and all he sees is, like, an eyeball.
Right.
Coming off the side of a camera because they're, you know, looking at the show through their phone, which is stupid. But hands down, best concert I've ever been to, I think.
So, anybody listening that knows anybody with Ghosts can get this episode in their hands, please do so. Just because. You look like you're thinking about something.
No. Well, so their list of tour dates on their North American tour has at the bottom more dates to come.
Well, yeah, I figured there would be because as big as the United States is compared to the rest, some of the other places they do tours at.
Will they play in Indiana?
Given the time of year we're going into, probably not. Maybe. The only place that they might that I know of that they have in the past is the Clyde Theater down where your sister lives, mm-hmm. or possibly the Coliseum down there. That's if they're doing stadium tours. Mm-hmm. Either way, if we are able to go, I'm sure we're going to go, because we were literally talking about already going again on the way home, our 2.5 hour drive back to the Emporium.
Like that, like people talk about post-concert depression, and I don't think I've ever had it until I went to the concert.
Right.
Like it's not an actual depression, but it's just like, fuck. It feels so far away, and it was only
it was only a week ago.
A week and a couple days ago.
It was a week ago the day we recorded this episode.
Yeah, still think about it every day.
Yep, because I've been listening to a lot more Ghosts since then.
Lame. Like, that was definitely an experience.
Yeah.
Or they call it a ritual,
yes, actually. Yes, it's not a concert, it's a ritual. It's a ritual. You gotta remember that. It's called a ritual with ghosts.
Yeah.
But I'm sure the many Jesuses, I don't know how it'd be going. We said
the multiple Jesus.
There's the one in particular I'm thinking of.
The one that,
do you know which one I'm talking about already?
Yeah.
So, like, of course, if you've never been to a ghost ritual, there's always somebody dressed up as Jesus. Well, this particular one that we went to had three. Two of them actually, I'm pretty sure, came together because. Uh-huh. I saw, what's her name, Vanessa, I can't remember her last name, from Headbangers Ball way back on MTV. She was interviewing two of them for Ghoulbangers Ball ahead of time, which hopefully the Grand Rapids one comes out soon. And then there was the one lone Jesus that was great because one of the roadies hyped up the crowd and everybody started chanting Jesus every time he turned around and was addressing the crowd, having, you know, waving as Jesus. As he turned in a slow circle around the Van Andel Arena in Grand Rapids, everybody just started chanting Jesus and losing their shit whenever he was facing their direction. And I'm sure it made his night. And then there was Moses with his commandment of let my people ghost.
Just some of the costumes other fans were wearing were very well put together.
Yeah.
It was hot as fuck that day.
Right.
I'm surprised a lot more people didn't sweat all their makeup off their face.
Oh, well, I'm sure more got baked on more than sweated off.
It was so hot.
Oh. So, only a couple Jesuses, quite a few Slovenian nuns and schoolgirls we saw, which we kind of expected to see that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
I saw more ass cheeks that day than I think I have in my entire lifetime.
Probably.
Yeah.
So if you are a fan of Ghost, or if you're not, go anyway. But definitely if you are a fan of Ghost, go to a ritual. You won't regret it.
Yes. And don't wait until the last minute to get your tickets, because a lot of them sold out.
Yep.
And I know as they gain momentum, continue to gain momentum.
Yep.
Tickets are going to be even harder to get.
Right, considering he did mention that they played a bar or a venue called the Intersection years ago there. And now they're playing in an actual arena event there in Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
Considering another name band with some weight was there in town too. But it's like that fan base wants to shit on Ghost.
Yeah.
But let's see. That other band particularly, I looked it up, has been around since 1994, and they're still playing these small venues, whereas Ghost has been around for half the time, if that. And they're now on a full-on world tour doing arenas, you know.
Yep.
But they suck. They're terrible. Okay. Yeah. Whatever.
Little weight. It's just ounces, though.
Right.
Just ounces.
Just what?
Ounces.
Just ounces?
Just ounces. Just very little weight.
No, well, the other band that was in town is just a bunch of toxic gatekeepers. But here's the thing. The beloved Ozzy Osbourne that just recently passed, he literally had called Ghost metal. So there is that. Who are you going to argue with that if the Ghost is metal or not? Nobody, because the literal Prince of fucking Darkness, as he would call himself at times, literally said that Ghost is actually a metal band. So suck it, gatekeepers.
Suck it.
Even though my favorite one is somebody calling it Scooby-Doo ABBA.
Scooby-Doo metal?
Mm-hmm. You know them. From the dog show.
Scooby-Doo ABBA?
Actually, no, that was from a meme I've seen. The person that we both know, like, they called it actually Scooby-Doo metal is what they call it.
Right. And so I was like, I've never heard you say Scooby-Doo ABBA.
It was from a meme. I just remembered I saw at some point.
Scooby-Doo ABBA doesn't make any sense.
But enough about the ghost the ghost ritual for those that aren't fans or whatever. What do you have for this week? Let me guess. It's underwater basket weaving as usual, or also known as true crime.
No.
You're a liar.
Mm-hmm. It's over dry basket weaving.
Over dry basket weaving? Okay, changing it up. Okay.
True crime.
Of course it is.
Of course. Got to stick to my niche.
Right. You ready to get started then?
I is.
All right, let's get going.
Helen Milner was born 1964 in New Zealand. Her mother's name was Anne, and Anne used to talk about how difficult it was for her to raise Helen. Apparently, her early life, she was a bit of a handful, to say the least. The very least. Before the age of 10, Helen was causing a lot of trouble, which wound up being the start of the route that she chose to take in life. Anne happened to be a lister, so she made a list that detailed each and every single one of the unsavory things that her daughter Helen did. Bad choices, habit, whatever you want to call it.
So she would just make random lists of things?
Well, you know, like some people will make a list of like the daily tasks they want to get done.
Yeah.
Or, you know, your grocery list. Like she just was a person that made lists to probably make her life easier.
Okay.
Helen attended high school in Christchurch, which was the largest city on New Zealand's South Island. This was a pretty prestigious school back then, but it didn't stop Helen from stealing her classmates' shit. They just never reported her for it. Didn't stop her from taking large sums of money from Anne's bank account either.
At the age of 10?
This is when she hit high school.
Okay. Don't know why the fuck I thought she was still 10 years old. Like, fucking damn. Committing grand larceny at the age of 10. How the hell did you figure that out at the age 10? Shit.
So she was stealing money from her mom. Anne never pressed charges. She was eventually expelled from school due to the thefts. I don't know how they found out because the students never reported her. I don't know if she got caught. Yeah.
Maybe.
Anne then enrolled Helen in Ritchie Secretarial College as she was concerned for Helen's future. After graduation, she worked as a typist. She was fired there for creating false documents. One being that it was okay to smoke in the staff lounge. Spoiler alert. It was not okay. She then got another job. Well, a new job. At United Building Society, which was a construction company, as a cashier. She was fired from there. Can you guess why?
She was smoking in the staff room?
For stealing money.
That would have been my second guess.
Anne paid them back. Anne, her mom, paid them back every cent that Helen stole.
So in her turn, mother's almost being an enabler, too.
Yes. In turn that they wouldn't turn Helen in or press charges and have her arrested. That job and her getting caught again was like a pivotal moment and kind of forced her into cleaning up her act. Just kidding. She didn't.
Right.
The path she started on as a young child continued, and it only got worse from here. She met a man and moved to Wellington. They got engaged. Their relationship was rocky, to say the least. Things ended very, very badly with them, and Helen wound up leaving Wellington, single and in debt. Wonder how she'll take care of that debt.
By stealing more money!
She wound up moving back to Christchurch. So money was always a big issue for Helen, especially at this time since, you know, debt. She continually used her family members for money, would show up to relatives that she hadn't seen for a long time, ask for money. She stole from her disabled aunt. She stole from her own father. Like, just, if they had money, I don't think she gave a fuck who she took it from.
Right.
She just took it. Helen, who would have been in her early 20s at this point, met and married a man named Mark Kearns, and this was in 1987. Together, they had two kids, Adam and Greg, and then they divorced in the mid-1990s, so they weren't married very long. And their divorce was not amicable by any means at all. They had an extremely rough custody battle that took place. Mark said Helen was manipulative.
Hey, there you go.
And that she showed no empathy. And Helen, being the upstanding citizen that she is, lied in court saying that Mark had moved to Australia to get full custody of their kids. And then went on to tell their kids that he moved away because he didn't want anything to do with them anymore. What a piece of shit. After that, Mark did not have an easy time maintaining a relationship with his boys because of Helen. Pretty sure she stood in the way of that. And he was really only able to see them once they got old enough to, like, go and visit him on their own. Phil Nisbet was born on March 20th, 1962. He was the oldest of four children and was a fierce protector of his siblings. The Nisbet family chose to move to Australia, but Phil chose to stay behind in New Zealand. He was an over-the-road truck driver, and he got paid fairly well. Like, that's a good paying job.
Yeah.
He was married to Vicky, and they shared a son named Zach, who wound up, well, who was Phil's oldest kid. When their relationship ended, he started seeing a woman named Karen, and they also had a son named Ben, and he would be Phil's youngest son. This relationship also fizzled out, leaving Phil single. This is when he met Helen. Details of how they met, when they met, where they met, I couldn't find. So don't ask, because I don't know. Helen and Phil seemed really, really happy together. They shared tons of pictures online, because it was early online days.
No.
But in all of them, they were always smiling, and they looked just really happy together. They got married in 2005. In the early stages of their marriage, both Helen and Phil's families were happy to see how happy they were together and that they were creating a new life after so much drama had passed in, you know, in their ex relationships and all that. But just like social media today, you only see the good stuff that gets posted, not the bad shit.
Right.
Their relationship was far from perfect. Helen's family blamed her for starting issues. Phil stayed away from conflict. He was just that kind of guy. Like, he didn't. From what I read about him, he's a lot like you. Like, he just doesn't want to deal with the drama, tries to avoid conflict as much as possible.
Yeah.
That's just kind of how he read to me. In 2006, Helen and her sister-in-law, Leanne, had a major falling out. Leanne's son, Lance, had told his mom that his uncle Phil had a plan that he was working on with Helen to get back at, not so much get back at, but to hurt his ex, Karen. Not long after that, Helen got tired of Phil and their relationship. She started talking shit about him behind his back, stated that she had no freedom because he was always home. While she was at work, she would vocally, I mean, for lack of a better word, fantasize about being a widow in front of her coworkers.
That's weird.
A little bit. But she never once mentioned just divorcing him. Not once.
Because, you know, that probably would have been the easier option, but more expensive option. But other than what I'm assuming she's probably going to be doing soon.
Right. Phil was rushed to the hospital on April 15th, 2009, after fainting at work. Doctors weren't sure why. They suspected that he had gotten a bug bite from his recent birthday trip to Australia. He had improved enough to be released and go home. But the night that he went home, he got sick again. Helen took him back to the hospital. Days after Phil's second return home from the hospital, Helen's son Adam started talking to him and told him, like, hey, I think my mom's trying to poison you.
Right.
But he had also said that he had noticed his mom holding, like, empty, like, the little plastic pill capsules that have, you know, like, powder. Like,
the actual little gel caps?
Not gel caps.
Well, I bet, like the actual plastic capsule of a pill. Okay.
Yes. Holding them, but they were empty. And that Helen had seen that he was in the room and tried to hide them from him. Phil did his best to reassure Adam, like, no, your mom would never do that. You know, it's okay. However, he must not have believed that shit that he said because he moved out the next day.
Right.
Before bed, on May 3rd, 2009, Phil texted his youngest son, Ben, to tell him he'd drop his hoodie off to him the next day because apparently he had left it at the house. So he was going to wash it and return it back to him. May 4th, 2009, the police got a call first thing in the morning. Helen had woke up and found Phil dead. When police arrived, they found Phil laying diagonally across the bed, not breathing, with his eyes wide open. They had noticed two empty pill packs and a half full glass of water on the side table. And Helen, out of nowhere, just kind of blurted out, he killed himself.
Because that's not suspicious if he'd thrown that crap out there.
Right. Police took her phone and looked at a text that was supposedly sent by Phil. It said things about how he couldn't go on anymore and that he wanted her to tell his son Ben how much he loved him and how much he loved her too. So this text was sent at 10:30 on May 3rd, the night before. Coroner came, picked up his body. Phil's autopsy came back showing he had high levels of anti-allergic medication called Phenergan, which crazily enough caused a severe allergic reaction inside his body, causing his death. He was allergic to the allergy medication.
Well, that's a little bizarre to think that somebody be allergic to an anti-allergen medicine.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are those people that are like literally allergic to water too. So anything is possible.
That is true. Pause. Phil's sister Leanne tried to accept his death and the cause as it was handed to them. Suicide. She couldn't wrap her head around that. And she outright rejected that that's what happened. After that, things started to be uncovered about Helen. However, police officers were very open shut about this case. Autopsy said it was suicide. It's suicide. We're not going to look into anything else. It was pretty much how that went.
Yeah.
On May 13th, 2009, Helen's own family came forward and said that they're pretty sure that she killed Phil. Her own family.
Well, yeah, because she has a track record of other criminal shit, so they wouldn't put it past her to do that, too. And plus, also her comments about, I wonder what it'd be like to be a widow probably didn't help matters much either, and that's probably why they were suspicious of that being a thing.
After her family went in, talked to the police, they took that information down, but they didn't do anything with it. They just, like, put it on the record, but they didn't, like, actively do anything with it. And then Helen got back in contact with her ex named Barry. He moved into the home that she had shared with Phil up until his death. 3 weeks after Phil died, he moved into that house. 3 weeks. 3 weeks.
I mean, at least it wasn't like the very next day. But still 3 weeks after that. But when, you know, you kill your husband, your current husband at the time, it's like whatever. Because, I mean, go back to Ronald Clark O'Brien at the comments and shit he was making at their son's funeral. You know, like talking about going on fucking vacations and shit like that, showing no signs of grief. And that would like also throw up a red flag for families. And that's what was his downfall, was not pulling the part out long enough, I guess you could say, lack of a better phrase for it right now.
So Leanne wound up reaching out to Helen, even though they had this falling out prior. She reached out to Helen and Helen let her know, oh, hey, I found a goodbye letter from Phil.
That you just happened to write.
So she read it to her over the phone.
Of course she did.
And then promised to show it to her the next time they saw each other in person.
Which she won't.
Leanne wound up flying to New Zealand with motive.
And she was probably like, oh, shit. When she like knocked on the door and she was like right there. It's like, sup, bro, where's my letter? I want to see it. I want my letter.
She was going to celebrate her son Lance's 21st birthday. She was also going to investigate her brother's death since the police officers didn't seem to give a fuck. She wound up staying with Helen the whole time she was there. Interesting.
Yeah.
When she got to Helen's house, she was met with a glass of vodka and the goodbye letter.
Don't drink the vodka.
The goodbye letter was typed. It was not written.
Oh, who would have thought?
But it did have Phil, the signature, just Phil, on the bottom of it. Leanne immediately didn't think that was her brother's signature.
Because also, who types out a goodbye letter and then actually signs it?
Right. But yeah, didn't think it was his signature, but she wound up keeping that to herself. Because she was there, again, to investigate, find out everything she could.
Because she didn't want to throw suspicion.
Correct. So instead of focusing on that signature, she focused on the letter itself. It stated that Phil had found out that Ben was not his biological son and that he couldn't stand to face him again. Helen also told Leanne that she found a little black book that contained names and numbers for people that he had cheated on her with, as well as a guide to becoming a gigolo. Juggalo. Gigolo? Jiggle. Gigolo.
Good Lord. All I can think of now is fucking Shaggy chewed open, the stereotypical pimp suit with the overgrown hat with the peacock feather and shit in it and all. Actually, oh, there probably is a picture. They probably have done something like that somewhere along their career.
I
even
spelled it correctly. I don't know why I read it like I read it the correct way. Second guessed what I wrote and what I fucking read.
If all words to throw out there, it hadn't have been juggalo. So great. Now we have,
I'm leaving that in there.
I know you are.
Just fuck it. Leanne was pissed. She didn't show it. You know, she said goodnight and went to bed to rest before meeting her family the next day for her son's birthday. The next day, Helen had gone to work, came home, and grabbed her mail on the way in. She found a letter from Phil's mother, Karen, asking her to pack up and send Phil's belongings to her in Australia, as well as the money that he had put aside for his son, Ben. Helen became enraged, yelling that she would put Karen in her place by telling her that Ben was not Phil's son. She also announced that she was not going to Lance's birthday party later on that evening. Kind of as like a fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Leanne kept her emotions in check and said she understood as not to upset Helen any further than her crazy ass already was. Leanne wanted to be able to stay as close to Helen as she could throughout her time in New Zealand. She wanted to uncover everything that she could because she really, like, in her heart of hearts, felt that her brother's death was a matter of foul play. I don't know what caused Helen to calm down. I don't know if it, you know, Leanne talked to her, talked her off a ledge, whatever.
Yeah.
But Barry, the ex-boyfriend, boyfriend again, drove both of them to Lance's birthday party. So Zach, which is Phil's oldest son, was greeted by Helen, and she was sweet as pie to him. She offered for him to come over and to go through his dad's things and to take whatever he wanted. And this really upset Leanne because Helen was a complete cunt to Ben, which was Phil's youngest son. Don't know why, but super nice to Zach, treated Ben like shit. Leanne still felt that Helen was the one that wrote that goodbye note and only included Ben in it to cause a rift between the two brothers. Why? Who the fuck knows?
Probably some way she figured him to be like to throw suspicion off her or whatever.
I don't know.
If I can create as much chaos as I can, people will not suspect me of murdering my husband, is my guess.
Well, it's fair. Before heading back to Australia, Leanne made a pit stop to the police station. She told them all the weird shit that had been seen and heard while she was staying with Helen. This, along with Helen's family already having been to the police station and saying, hey, pretty sure that my kid, my mom, killed this guy. Now they want to do something about it.
Yeah.
They're going to reinvestigate. Police called Helen and had her come into the station and supply them with that goodbye letter that Phil supposedly had written. And she did that on July 6th, 2009. Oddly enough, the signature was missing. 5 days later, on July 11th, 2009, Barry gave Helen a $2,000 golden diamond ring. But it wasn't an engagement ring because he didn't ask her to marry him. It was just a gift. Okay, just a gift. In January of 2010, Helen had to go back to the police station with another statement. When she first talked to them, she made their marriage sound great. Everything was good. They never fought. There were never any issues. This time around, it was the complete opposite in statements. She said that the police were the ones that found the goodbye note and that the signature that was on there only happened to look like it said Phil.
So we had the one that was written... read off over the fucking phone that had a signature. And then the second one, which I apparently spaced where it was, had no signature, but now it's turned into, it might be Phil.
Mm-hmm. Police stated that the letter she turned in did not have a signature. She responded by saying, oh, well, it's been a while since I've seen it. I don't remember if it did or not.
Yeah, okay. You're just making yourself look more sus with everything you do. The cops are like, sure, interesting.
In March 2010, she started receiving threatening texts from her son, Adam. This was found to be false. She bought the phone the text came from. She was the one threatening herself in text.
Right, because, like, if there was threatening texts, then, like, they're not going to go fucking talk to him. And he probably like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yep. This was her payback to him for finding out that he had agreed with his grandma, Helen's mom,
mm-hmm.
when they went to the police station and said, like, she's dangerous. She's probably the one that hurt him.
Yeah, so she's probably trying to get everybody in trouble.
Yes. Yeah. She had also accused him of sending death threats to his ex-girlfriend. Adam wound up being picked up by the police and arrested, and he was held in jail for 15 days. Before it was revealed that it was all Helen's doing. 15 days. October 2010, Helen was put on house arrest for 5 months once it became known that during all of this, the death of Phil, her new old romance with Barry.
Her current boy toy.
Helen was still being Helen. She was stealing from her job from January to September 2009. Okay. So, smush that in between all the other shit that's going on.
She's a busy lady with fucking doing dumb shit.
Correct. Fast forward to November 2010. A forensic investigation was started regarding the death of Phil. On the stand, Helen described Phil as being scared, nervous, and anxiety-ridden. She describes the night that he died as any other night, that they ate dinner together, she went and took a shower, he went to bed, she went to bed about an hour after he did. When she got in bed, you know, she gave him a kiss goodnight, and then she went to sleep, and then woke up, and he was dead. It's going to be a little difficult to sleep next to somebody who's laying diagonally across the fucking bed.
Yep. Because, I mean, there has been times you.
I know.
You have done that. And I'm just like, I'm just going to go sleep in the chair.
I know.
And the next morning, so I was like, when'd you come to bed? Because you were across the bed diagonally and I wasn't going to disturb you. Because if you're sleeping like that, I know you're exhausted.
Right. That's kind of a red flag, too. Like. The police saw how he was laying when they went to investigate the, you know, him, her waking up to him dead, right. Clearly. But the judge determined that this was not enough evidence to state that he had killed himself.
Right.
So this then turned that into a homicide investigation. Helen was arrested on October 27th, 2011. She was charged with 2 counts of attempted murder for the 2 druggings that led him to the hospital, and then 1 count of murder. Throughout these charges, she was still going through court for the shit that she had pulled against her son, Adam. This landed her 2 years and 8 months in prison in August of 2012 for what she did to her son. December 12th, 2013 is when her murder trial begins for Phil. In the span of 2 weeks, there were 70 witnesses that came and testified. These were, you know, the police officers that showed up on scene, EMS, dispatch lady, man, whoever.
The dispatchers, the coroners, the medical examiners, all those people.
And character witnesses, including her coworkers. So 2 weeks of 70 different individuals.
Let's see how she tried to get out of this one, ladies and gentlemen.
Correct. All of this to form a case against Helen for attempting to kill Phil and for killing Phil. Money was believed to be the motive, as Phil had a $250,000 life insurance policy. So, one of those 70 witnesses was their financial advisor. That financial advisor testified that Phil was there when they filled this policy out, but that Phil wasn't the one that filled it out. It was Helen.
Of course, that's usually how these kind of stories go.
Yes, that she had filled all the paperwork out herself. And that there was a clause in it stating that there was a 13-month exclusion for voluntary death, which would have expired in March 2009, right before he was poisoned the first time. Because if he had killed himself prior to that, no money would have been paid out. So she had to wait until after.
Right.
Okay. So it came out that she had used fake names and addresses to get the prescriptions for the Phenergan. She'd open them, dump the contents into his food, mix it in there, and then just get rid of the capsule. She would also rearrange things afterwards to, like, set the scene. Like
placing typing. A body diagonally across the body. Not diagonally across the, putting the body again over the body. What I meant to say. Correct. Diagonally across the bed is what I meant to fucking say, because I said body across the body. You all know what I actually meant to say.
So, for example, her setting the scene would be like typing the suicide note.
Right.
Or sending herself that goodbye text from Phil. Leanne really wanted to disprove the claim in that letter that Ben was not Phil's son. So she had a DNA test done, and he was 100% the biological father of Ben. So there was no disputing that anymore.
So that's probably why she was trying to cause that rift.
It could be.
Wait, the rift was between the two brothers, correct? Yeah. Okay, never mind then.
There wasn't a rift, but it was like she was trying to cause issues between them.
Right.
Helen's co-workers testified in court that they had often heard her talking about wanting to suffocate Phil and talking about poison. Just in general, talking about poison.
Again, like Ronald Clark O'Brien kept talking about that shit also. And that's like, that's fucking weird.
Some of them stated that they called her the Black Widow behind her back. That's the nickname that she was given. She's New Zealand's Black Widow. During witness testimony, Adam took the stand. He went over going to the police station with his grandma on May 13th, 2009, after Helen said that she wanted to kill Phil right in front of him. He asked, you know, why don't you just divorce him instead? She said she didn't want to lose half of the house. Ding, ding, ding. He talked about catching Helen with the empty capsules and the pale blue powder in them and how she tried to hide them from him when she realized that he caught her.
Right.
He had also stated how Phil got sick and Helen took him to the hospital and how he talked to Phil and said, hey, I think my mom is trying to poison you. And how Phil laughed it off. Well, not laughed it off, but
just dismissed it.
Just kind of shrugged it off. Yeah.
Probably my guess is like, oh, it's just kids being kids kind of thing with that. Phil probably saw that as, oh, that's just kids being kids over exaggerating because they thought they saw something and just was like, whatever. Your imagination's running wild, kid. Don't bother me. Almost kind of thing.
Next up on the stand was the first police officer that arrived to Phil and Helen's house. And he stated how Helen's crying and how she was overly dramatizing her crying was very weird to him. And that he found it really convenient that the goodbye text from Phil was found right then when he entered the house.
Right. I'm sure you heard me just chuckling. It's just I'm finding it amazing how much similarities are to the Ronald Clark O'Brien case that I've been bringing up, you know, because he did the same thing in the hospital.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we need to pump his stomach too, because he's acting super hysterical for some reason. He's like, oh, no, I'm good. You know?
Yeah. So while in court, everyone found out that Helen's own mom had written into the courts to have Helen taken out of her will. She basically said in an instant, well, she knew one of two things, that her daughter was either evil or mentally ill. Helen's defense team kept beating it down everyone's throats that Phil had committed suicide, which
it's like, look here, you dumb bitches. We have this longest toxicology report of shit that says negative, except one thing.
Right. Meanwhile, another judge said there's not enough evidence here to prove that this was a suicide. This is now a homicide investigation.
Right.
So apparently that didn't mean shit. Meanwhile, the prosecutors had a slew of shit against Helen, and even the judge that said this case should have been treated as a homicide from the start. It took the jury a half a day before outright rejecting the defense's plea that Phil had committed suicide.
Yeah.
The verdict of this case was that Helen was guilty of one count of attempted murder and one count of murder. I don't know why she wasn't guilty of two attempts and one murder, you know? Sentencing took place in February 2014. The judge stated that she killed Phil solely for his money and her own personal gain. She was sentenced to life in prison. She would be eligible for parole no earlier than 17 years after her sentence started, which would be 6 years from now, in 2031. The police's reputation was ruined with this investigation. Like, they royally fucked themselves. Like, they fucked up when they heard suicide, and they were, like, they took that at face value, and they were like, yep, case closed.
Yeah, well, like, they should have red flagged that shit. Like, oh, he committed suicide right off the bat at the door. Like, that's weird. We literally just walked in the door.
Especially after hearing the testimony from the first officer on the scene that was like, something's not right with her. And her own son and mother coming into the police station and saying, hey, I think she's trying to kill him. And Phil's sister Leanne going into the police station and saying, there's no way my brother would do that.
Right.
Like, there were so many opportunities for them to expand their tiny fucking brains and actually look into this further. And they swatted them all away until damage had already been done, you know? Mark Kearns, Helen's first husband, the father of her two sons, came out after the trial stating that Helen was toxic and that she single-handedly almost severed the relationship between him and his sons, but that they were currently working on mending those relationships. Helen's son, Adam, took her to court and won in 2014 over the harassment and distress that she caused when she was trying to make him out to be a threat. She was ordered to pay him $55,000. Phil's sister Leanne had some parting words in regard to Helen. I hope she dies in there. That was it. So Phil was only 47 at the time of his death, which is way too young to die.
Right.
That's like our age, basically.
Yeah.
Too fucking young. But he left behind two kids that are now going to grow up without a dad, left behind a mom that's going to grow up without her son, and left behind siblings that now have to live the rest of their lives without their brother. Like, for the narrow-minded people in this story, this case, that thought he had committed suicide. Like, suicides, I'm not for it.
Right.
That's what Helen should have done. And left Phil and his kids and his sister and his mom, left them the fuck alone. Like, I don't condone that, but why can't the crazy fuckers take themselves out and leave everybody else alone?
I don't know.
But yeah, that's my case this week. The Black Widow of New Zealand.
So funny thing is, it's not what you think. So before we started recording this, Sarah made the comment. I hope you haven't heard this before.
You've heard this before?
Let me finish.
Okay.
And I brought up the point that when she did Cherish Periwinkle, something you guys don't know, I heard this before because there was something in there because I heard about another well-known podcast that covered it. Uh-huh. It happened in the show Dark Topic. They covered this, not this, but Cherish Periwinkle case that Sarah had done. And I was like, I revealed it to her. She's like, son of a bitch. Like, no, keep going because you're going to tell it in a different way than what he did. But the funny thing is, 2 days ago, I seen a post about the New Zealand Black Widow off of a page on Facebook, and I almost sent it to you, but I was like, no, she probably already has it.
Really?
On her list, yes.
Oh.
Figured you already did, so I was just damn. Like, I didn't bother sending it to you.
Nope. So. Well, hey, you know the kind of story, well, not the stories that I like, but.
Yeah, because I'm sure if you come up with some kind of active or mass shooter thing, you're going to send it to me and see if I haven't done it yet or not.
Yep. Yes, I would.
But that's it for you.
It is. What do you think about that?
Yeah. It was, like I said, like it kept throwing similarities in there about Ronald Clark O'Brien. If you're curious to hear that story in its entirety, go back to our episode. I was looking it up while listening to Sarah and I forgot what the damn number was. Episode 22, I want to say it was, is what I looked. I
was going to say it was an early one.
Yeah, it was. Yes. Episode 22, The A-Hole That Killed Halloween. It was before the episode 23, which from what I understand is a fan favorite. It will kill you when I talked about the Onwick Poison Garden.
But, so yeah, go listen to that episode. And then all the episodes that come after episode 22.
Yep.
And then go listen to 1 through 21.
So in other words, just go listen to everything all over again.
Start from the beginning.
What?
And then come back for the next two episodes.
Yeah.
And then we'll be at episode 100.
And who knows what we're going to do for 100?
I don't know. I know that my sister has said that she would like to donate something to us to do a giveaway, maybe.
Okay.
For our 100th. So.
You can do that. I don't know. I'll have to figure that out.
We'll see. We shall see. Yep. It'll be next month, so.
So, also with this episode, if you guys are a fan of Ghost, actually, no, let me ask this question first. Since I didn't think about it at first when we were talking about the concert / ritual covering both bases for the fans of Ghost and non-fans, what song or songs did you were happy to hear play live?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I am asking you right now.
Oh, man. I was really, really happy that they did Rats for obvious reasons.
Right.
Call Me Little Sunshine. Mm-hmm. And not just because of that outfit because and him levitating. Papa.
That was the other thing I was a little disappointed in was that he didn't. It was only the one song he came out as Papa. I was hoping he would come out on the stage further than what he did. Because during his performance of Call Me Little Sunshine, which, you know, once again, great live, but it for the appearance of him levitating. So we've talked about the next ritual we go to. We're going to try and get floor tickets because seeing some of the official video, you miss a lot if you're not on the floor. You miss how the visuals are in sync with the over the head logo, the Ghost logo that's like ginormous, that's lit up with stage lighting. Because I've seen video of that today of how that's actually in sync with the visuals. that are on the big giant screen behind them.
Another one I was super happy they did was Year Zero.
Of course. I mean, that's two of their biggest songs besides Cerise and Chorus Mariana Cross right now. Yeah. I mean, that was like the entire thing. You know, all their greatest hits. I mean, there's more because they didn't have Caraxarian and didn't have Searchlight. Mm-hmm. That's one song I was hoping they would have played live, but it didn't get, you know, it didn't.
Yeah.
You know, Year Zero and, you know, The Darkness of My Love for obvious reasons between you and I.
Yeah. But I think that
even though it's technically not a love song between two lovers, it's not. But, you know, but for us, it is.
Yeah.
Because we're weird like that. Yeah. But, you know, you know, in Peacefield, which, you know, I know there was some controversy because of a half a second clip of the drums of that. Oh, my God. It sounds like fucking Journey. It's like Journey does not own that fucking particular drum beat.
There's only so many drum beats you can do.
Right. It's like when the latest album came out, I remember that making a big deal. And then I heard the whole song. I'm like, you guys are going to focus on like 0.3 seconds of a song and say, oh, they stole that from Journey.
And then when they did Lacrima and he came pouncing down the stairs of the stage, like a little Nosferatu that he is, was fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
That whole concert, I wish we could go back.
Yeah.
I want to go back. Take me back.
I would say...
take me back.
We will eventually. But I would say probably the most fun one to see wasn't Dance Macabre. It was Kiss the Goat because of how all the rainbow hippie colors came with it. But
the whole fucking thing.
It would start to finish. It could have been a Between Two Skeletons about the whole concert, you know.
Yes.
I'm sure you guys won't want to hear that. But, you know, let us know in the comments if wherever you guys are listening to us, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, I think might have comments. I don't think Apple Music has comments, but YouTube, the Facebook group, somewhere. Let us know what your favorite Ghost songs are.
And if you went to see them, what did you think of the show?
Yeah.
What was your favorite song they did live?
Or what song you were hoping you'd hear live?
Also, the bass. Yeah. I have always said, if I learned how to play any instrument, it would be the bass.
Yeah, like, I guess you could say the bass, concert was, like, super dirty, I guess, in a better way.
Oh, good.
I don't know how else to put it.
There's no words. Literally the best concert I've ever been to. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, also, I was kind of hoping to hear If You Have Ghosts with the Ghoulettes like they did right now. I was kind of hoping for that to be live. But I also kind of figured that was a special thing for when they were recording right here, right now.
Probably.
But also, if you're disappointed that no Bulgy Skeleton showed up for Dance Macabre. I'm just kidding.
No what?
Bulgy Skeleton dancer showed up for Dance Macabre.
Oh, yeah. No bouncy booby skeletons.
That's not the skeleton I was talking about that everybody talked about. Remember the super bulgy one that everybody was talking about when Here, Right Now came out?
I just remember the bouncy boobs.
Well, there was one of the male dancers that was super bulgy, and like when they came out with like the little plushie, then everybody was actually disappointed that it wasn't super bulgy. Yeah.
Good Lord.
But also, that remembers something that you had asked me, and I thought about it. The problem why I don't show anything about concerts is has to do with growing up, going to see my brother and sister and other concert performances for like that. It's been ingrained into my head that you're not supposed to do that shit at concerts.
Okay.
It's something I just can't break. It's not that I'm not having fun. It's just,
I know.
It's how I was brought up. I'm sorry.
But you're so stoic. You just sit there totally still.
I know. That's the problem. No
smile on your face or nothing.
Well, that's the problem. It's how I was brought up about going to concerts and stuff. You go in between songs. You don't bop your head and shit like that. It's like, I know it's not to do with it. It has to do with music styles, but it's so much of that growing up that it's something I don't think about.
Okay.
Blame it all on my roots, but it didn't show up in with.
Stop. Fucking despise that song.
But I didn't show up in boots.
Oh.
For us to leave the Emporium. So what do you think?
I can throw at you.
We're going to get out of here before she starts throwing stuff at me. So I think it's time we close the Emporium up for the day. What do you think?
I agree.
So until next time.
Remember to creep it real.
And have friends in low places. Ugh. Bye.
Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabremporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast.